Are we entering another McCarthy era? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
It's very good to be back with you, Barry, in our respective studios. That's a very interesting opening. Since we don't discuss these things, how you're going to open, I'm going to wait and see how this develops.
Well, you see, we sometimes do that because I want you to be as surprised as our listeners should be sometimes about our opening. All I can say right now, Chuck, is we've got an awful lot to unpack today in relation to a lot of things that are going on. But I first want to start locally and then work our way up to the big picture. And locally, and I mean locally here in the state of Ohio, it seems that there might be a return to, well, the McCarthy era. Now, Chuck, since you're our resident historian, why don't you give folks a little background on the McCarthy era first?
Well, in the 50s, Joseph P. McCarthy was a senator from Wisconsin. And if you know anything about senators from Wisconsin from very early in the 20th century, Wisconsin's a very progressive state. And believe it or not, Joseph P. McCarthy, and when I say this, progressives everywhere will go insane, but Joseph P. McCarthy was essentially a progressive. He, at one point, had dated Kennedy sisters. In other words, Bobby's, Teddy, and John's sisters. One of the sisters had been dated by Joseph P. McCarthy, and that's why Bobby Kennedy was a very close friend of Joseph P. McCarthy's. A lot of people don't know that. A lot of the left likes to deny that, but the fact is they were very close friends, and Bobby Kennedy was actually on Joseph P. McCarthy's staff in the United States Senate at one point, and actually during what have been known as the Army McCarthy hearings. Now, if you just off the top of your head asked people what Joseph P. McCarthy was all about, here's what they would say. They would tell you that somehow Joseph P. McCarthy was involved in blacklisting actors in Hollywood. Right?
Yeah, you would usually hear that pretty clearly. Yes.
Okay. What did Joseph P. McCarthy actually have to do with blacklisting actors in Hollywood?
Really had nothing to do with it.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing because Joseph P. McCarthy's main focus, Joseph P. McCarthy's main concern was members of the Communist Party and supporters of Soviet Russia, Stalinists, inside the State Department. Now, Joseph McCarthy was famous for standing at a press conference and holding up papers and saying, I'm in possession of a list of over 300 members of the Communist Party who are currently involved in the, or not just members of the Communist Party, but members of organizations in support of the Communist Party inside the State Department. Now, in retrospect, that's really not hard to believe, since the State Department at the time of McCarthy's making these statements, remember, this was the early 50s, had been dominated by the Roosevelt-Truman cabal since 1933. So, in other words, for 20 years, I don't remember the exact dates that McCarthy made that statement, but it was rather famous or infamous in many cases. But the State Department had been under control of the Democratic Party really for over 20 years. And had just come into the, I believe that Eisenhower had just been elected. But in any case, essentially, there were a number of hearings in the United States Senate in which it was exposed that there were members of the Communist Party in the State Department. Not just in the State Department, but throughout government. And when I say members of the Communist Party, I also mean people who just simply were Stalinists. And the State Department was rife with them. Now, Joseph McCarthy was eventually censured and, frankly, hounded to his death. He died of a kidney ailment in 1958 or 59, I think. It was claimed.
Possibly, yeah, I don't remember what it was.
But. It was claimed that he was a terrible alcoholic and drank himself to death and all that stuff. There are people who say, no, that's nonsense. But McCarthy became a target, and eventually he was essentially by himself because what he had done was he had begun to expose these people, and the deep state, what we would now call the deep state, all came together to, well, if you've ever seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers, by the end, once you've been assimilated by the body snatchers, you can spot the non-assimilated immediately. And
yes,
and
yes.
You get they point their finger and go, ah! Well,
right.
That's what happened to Joseph McCarthy. They pointed their finger at him, and he was hounded to his death. Okay. So years and years and years later, Joseph McCarthy's name is a byword. And by that I mean, you say things like, "Oh, that's McCarthyite." If you try, somebody is doing a smear campaign, "Oh, you're a McCarthyite." As if Joseph McCarthy didn't actually find communists in the State Department.
Well, and it's very interesting, Chuck, because even though McCarthy was a progressive, he's now being considered in modern era as a ultra conservative.
Yes, it was,
hilarious. But you know, because it just shows you just how our political discourse is like an accordion. You know, it doesn't like move forward; it just kind of breathes out and then collapses back in and then breathes back out again. And I think we're in another one of those, you know, breathing out kind of situations here in our culture. With this whole McCarthy, and the reason why I use the specter of McCarthy. Well, it starts, and I'm going to share with you here and I'm actually going to, while we're talking, sometimes we run across things and then we have to share it with each other via email while we're talking so the other person knows what we're talking about.
Yes. It does happen.
What I'm going to talk about is an article that appears on the Cincinnati Inquirer's website at cincinnati.com, and it's titled, "Why Has Anti-Tax Group Coast Been Singled Out in School Board Questionnaire?" So it's a very interesting article, okay, because Coast is the Citizens Opposed to Additional Spending and Taxes. It's a conservative group based out of the Cincinnati area that has been around for a few decades now, and they've done a lot of great work in opposing unnecessary spending and levies that are just ridiculous because they don't have any economic, you know, sense to them. They're a very well-run group, very, very tuned in to what's going on, and they have a lot of impact. Sometimes a Coast endorsement can make or break a candidate, or a Coast opposition can really can put a damper on a big levy campaign. So here's the deal. Right now in the King's Local School District, which is down in Warren County, they just had a little situation. You may have heard about it. You saw it on social media or on the internet, where a recreational basketball league decided that they would do something really, really stupid. And obviously the heads of this league were basically need to have their heads examined. But they created this league, and they gave the team a very, shall we say, immature name for the team.
My son's on that
and
team.
Then if you looked at their jerseys, the backs of them basically had cutesy written racial epithets, you know, negative stereotype names and labels for people of color and things of that nature. These were on, like, high school boys, okay? It blew up. I mean, it created a firestorm. And one of the King's Local School District school board members, whose son was on this team, a guy by the name of Kerry McKernan, the school board member, resigned his seat over it. Okay, so now King's Local is looking for a new member of the local school board. And so they put out, and of course, people can, you know, apply to interview with the board to get the appointment, you know, to fill the position. There's only a problem because basically And this article that's written by Jason Williams at the Inquirer basically says here that King's Local School District, a taxpayer-funded government entity, I'm glad he brought that out, has buried a potentially disturbing message in its questionnaire for prospective board members. And, you know, and he does this, and the things in italics in this article, we'll post this up on the website at principalpolicy.com so you guys can read it yourselves. But in things in italics is like his thought process of what he's seeing. And what he says his thought process, he says, if you're a member of a government watchdog group that's held the district accountable in recent years, sorry, you have no shot at getting this board seat.
Yes, that's a great article. And that's
a great article. Yeah. And he says that the questionnaire mentions COAST and another group, the Citizens for Accountability and Results in Education, or CARE, in their questionnaire. And it basically, the question there reads, how do you feel about the influence of groups such as COAST or CARE on our educational system? And then the real kicker question, are you a member of either of these groups? And then his thought balloon, oh, by the way, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party of the United States?
Yes.
Which and that's right into our McCarthy question.
That's right. That was McCarthy's, the questioning of the committee. Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party of the United States?
Yeah. So then the author of the article asked the question, so why single out just COAST and CARE? Could it be because the citizen-led groups have teamed up to demand the Warren County District be more transparent, opposed its tax levies, and exposed problems in the school? A district spokeswoman says it's simply because those groups, quote, have shown an interest in the district. But that's a bunch of malarkey, COAST founder and local attorney Chris Finney said. And even Finney says, this is really McCarthy-esque. So there he is using this in its proper form. But again, but not proper to what the historical reality
no.
is. This was be more, you know, but this is the exposure of this. He says it's really a continuation of problems that have plagued the King's local school districts for years, a lack of accountability, and a culture of secrecy, unquote. This is from Chris Finney, the attorney who heads up COAST. So the Cincinnati Inquirer reached out to other attorneys, the First Amendment attorneys, and basically said they've never seen anything like this, but where they're not sure if it's illegal to ask such questions, but they do admit that, yeah, somebody could basically, if you filled out this application and then you got turned down, you could possibly file a claim against this school district for even asking that question, because it says that they essentially have, and this is a Matt Miller Novak, an attorney, a First Amendment attorney, says, quote, they essentially have an application where a legislative body is potentially discriminating against applicants based on their association with a political group, which could have First Amendment as well as 14th Amendment implications, unquote. And asked if COAST plans to take legal action, Finney said, quote, they will be forced to stand up in front of a judge and explain what they've done. In other words, he's saying, we're going to sue them.
Yeah, we're going to sue. Yeah, that's
going
to happen.
We're going to sue them.
Yeah.
So really, this is very interesting. But now, of course, when they start digging into this, and this is a great article, as it gets into the history of how COAST has actually, like, fought corruption and dug in and found things going on in the school district that are bad and, you know, to – and basically supporting the taxpayers and the parents in this district. But they get down into it and they say, okay, well, when they start asking the Board of Education, they said they emailed and called the superintendent, Tim
yeah.
Ackerman,
yep.
And a spokesperson, Don Gould, for the district. None of them called back, but the spokesperson sent an email basically saying, well, that specific question, was provided to the board by the King's Education Association, the district's teachers union.
Yes.
The KEA, which is a, I don't know if they're, I'm assuming they're a member of the OEA, the Ohio Education Association. But so that one particular question, the McCarthyite question, the we're going on a political witch hunt question, the if you are a member of either one of these groups, you can kiss your chances of getting this board seat goodbye, has by the left. Now, Chuck, this is consistent with McCarthy as a progressive and as a teachers association. And let's not kid ourselves, folks. I don't know of any of the, whether it's a local, state, or national, of a teachers union that isn't a progressive shop.
No.
You can point one out. You may think your local one's very conservative
yes.
or very moderate. they're all progressive.
That doesn't mean so, every member of the union is a progressive. What it means is that your leadership is, whether you think so or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so, you know, when it gets right down to it, Chuck, here we have the progressive left doing what they always do. It's just that they're turning their guile and their derision up on those who are associated with conservative, good government, transparency, lower taxes type organizations.
Well, okay. You want to hear a Clinton-esque, well, you've read this article, so you know, but the Clinton-esque answer, yeah. Candidates that were running for the King's Board of Education in the last two election cycles completed the same questionnaire prior to the board candidate night. In other words, we've been screening candidates for at least two election cycles. Gould said that the current board wanted to give the applicants the same opportunity. Asked why Coast and Kerr were specifically mentioned, Gould said, "The question was left in the survey because the two groups have shown an interest in our school district in the past." Ladies and gentlemen, that is Clintonism writ large. Spin it. Spin it, spin it, spin it. So let's forget McCarthyism. How about Clintonism? This is one of the worst spins and worst attempts at spin that I have ever seen. Oh, gosh, we're not going to screen anybody out. We're just trying to get the information out there for the voters. Wrong. You think a Coast or Kerr member is ever going to be appointed to a school board seat?
Well, actually, if you look in that article, there was a Coast member who was a school board member in King's local district who then resigned their seat.
Elected or appointed?
I believe it was elected.
Yeah, that's different. That's different, Barry.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking appointed.
Will there ever be one appointed? No.
No.
You know?
Nope. Yeah. I sort of skimmed over that part. Now, the reason, again, you kind of went over the reason. I'm looking at what the name of this team was. Came up with this, somebody should have resigned over this. Actually, somebody should have been fired over this. The idea that had anything to do with a intramural team or the name of the team, the official name of the team. No. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll post a link and you can read the story for yourself. But it's in the Cincinnati Inquirer and you can find it at cincinnati.com.
Absolutely. But I just, that kind of like opens up the door here because we have another one, Chuck, and I'm going to bring this up, and you probably have seen this already. If not, then go over to our friends at Third Rail Politics because they popped an article up here. We're taping on Thursday. They popped an article up on Wednesday that I felt was also interesting and reminiscent of this whole McCarthy theme. And it's headlined, Clueless Republicans Still Cracking Sex in Workplace Jokes. Their workplace. And this byline's by Connor Brown over at Third Rail. And it's an interesting point because this is surrounding basically a roast, a send-off party for the former chief of staff of the Ohio House of Representatives, a gentleman by the name of Mike Ditto, who is leaving government service to go run a congressional campaign, actually in the 12th district, Chuck, your district, for one of the establishment Republicans who are trying to run to replace Pat Tevery. So what do they do when they get together to send a colleague off? Well, if you're some of these, and honestly, tone deaf is probably being kind. If you're some of these Republicans, you talk about your colleagues who are not there and you bash them. Well, that's not what we believe a professional person who, you know, is there to represent the people of their districts and to represent the state of Ohio probably should be doing. But that's what they did. So they get downtown at the athletic club and do this little going away party. And of course, it's a going away party fueled by lots of free booze, compliments of the Ohio House Republican Operating Committee, which is called OROC, which is their campaign money arm for the Republican caucus for the House. And so basically said that, you know, they with all this booze, that when they started getting up to do these little send-off bon mots for Ditto, things got way out of hand.
Well, obviously, and, yes.
Okay. And basically, so Third Rail said that they weren't invited, obviously, because I think that Third Rail came up a lot in the conversation as well from what we gathered, because they've been holding these people's feet to the fire. That supposedly Senator Matt Huffman, who is, you know, supposedly in line as one of the main contenders to fill the seat of then, which will be outgoing Senate President Larry Obhoff here in a little bit, as the next Senate president, said he played MC and regaled the group how a female candidate requesting support was actually a real, and then he used a phrase that if you look at the first letters of each of those four words spells out a certain, shall we say, derogatory anatomical description.
Yes.
And I'm not even going to go there to say, because I don't want that stuck in people's heads on this phrase.
One of the ugliest words you can use.
Yeah, one of the ugliest words you could say to anybody, much a woman or anybody else. Said Huffman also took a pot shot at Representative Marlene Anelski, joking that she was, quote, very unpopular. Well, gee, and they say, sorry, Marlene, guess Matt's not going to ask you the homecoming this year. He's going with the cool kids. Well, there's a kind of an underlying problem with that even as well, Chuck. I know Representative Anelski. I can't say that we see eye to eye on everything. She, you know, some of her social positions are not my social positions. But Representative Marlene Anelski has been doing one thing and one thing well during her term in office, and she's been there for four terms. And that is, she has pressed for suicide prevention and awareness. Why? Her own son took his life. She has raised money for suicide prevention. She's got a foundation. This is something, the reason why she got into politics. But she's not popular with the in crowd. So we can make fun of her during this. I was really kind of set wrong by that.
You should have
more
been,
than
yeah.
anything else, more than this other stuff. That one was the one I thought, you know what, this guy doesn't get it. And so, but it says in the article, Connor Brown says the worst was yet to come.
Huh.
Representative William Seitz called out former Representative Diana Fessler, who you and I both know, Chuck.
Yep.
Who is a fine human being and a dedicated public servant and someone who gets it because she understands worldview. Well, Bill Seitz, how did he describe his former colleague? Now, she hasn't been in the legislature now for about 6 years, I think. A nut job who, quote, wore a tinfoil hat, unquote. But it says more demeaning still, he compared her to his current Southwest Ohio colleague, Representative Candace Keller. Now, folks, we've talked about Candace Keller on this program before. She is a freshman member from Butler County, and I have to say, Chuck, she is probably the most consistent pro-life leader that the Ohio House has ever seen. She does not back down. She can debate Democrats on the floor eloquently, and one of the first things she did when she was appointed to fill a seat right after she won the general election for the next term because the seat had come open, with the leaving of the current rep who was running for Congress and then got appointed to a cushy job in the Kasich administration when he lost. Candace Keller is nothing but class and nothing but a honorable and respected person, except from this crowd. Bill Seitz is the majority leader. So, and he's also the House policy guru, which means that he has a lot of pull on whether or not people like Candace get their bills moving and can get, you know, things done for their constituency. If this is the way he feels about her, it's no wonder she she's been having difficulty trying to get some of her through. But Representative Keller does won't let that stymie her, because as we were recording this, something popped up on my screen that a rumor alert from Third Rail Politics, who we're reading at here, basically laid out the fact that it looks like Candace Keller is filing a formal complaint against both Speaker Cliff Rosenberger and Representative Bill Seitz for their comments and for their lack of maturity, I guess, a behavior not befitting an elected official. Now, she'll probably file that possibly with the legislative inspector general, it would be my guess. You know, and this isn't an era, Chuck, where, you know, Seitz continued on, and I'm assuming he'd been to the well a few times, and I don't mean the well of the rostrum. I mean the well drink. Of the free bar that the free they bar, had over there, because, you know, Bill Seitz is not known to be a teetotaler, all right? But he continued on with this running diatribe that he was going on to, and he upped the ante by starting to help the crowd imagine, you know, legislators' work set to music. And, of course, the legislators he picked out were no longer legislators. It was Cliff Height and Wes Goodman, who we've talked about on this program before. These were the two members. One was the Senator Height and Representative Goodman, who both left the legislature in disgrace. For Height, it was the sexual harassment of a female staffer, and for Goodman, it was engaging in inappropriate conduct in his statehouse office with another individual who wasn't his wife and wasn't female. So Seitz decided he would use popular music titles to kind of set a tone for these, and of course he used a couple of titles. I'm not even going to go into what he used. It's on Third Rail. You can go read it if you want. Which were basically completely off color and frankly demeaning and beneath someone who's supposedly as respected as a leader. And again, Bill Seitz being the majority leader in the House, if this is how the majority gets led, I can see them possibly being led to electoral defeat if this is the height of the thinking that they have. Now, there's another little side to the story, Chuck, that came out was after this event was over with, it seems that Representative Seitz had a little trouble navigating the stairs, because if you've ever been to the athletic club, there's this big sweeping grand marble staircase that goes up to the second level where all the banquet rooms and things of that nature are. It's a beautiful place. But I guess coming out of the event, he ended up taking a spill severely enough that he broke his ankle that he has to have surgery on it.
Wow. That's a serious break. Yeah.
So he's in the hospital today. And he was in the, and this happened, like, I believe it was on Tuesday night. So this all came out Wednesday. So he was in the hospital Wednesday, and I'm friends with Representative Keller on Facebook. So, you know, she was very concerned about this whole, you know, the being basically demeaned by her colleagues, you know, in this little thing. And I, you know, when I read this originally, I was reading down through here and I thought, yeah, okay, I get it. These guys were all together. It was a roast for a guy going out. It was a boys club deal. Then I read further. There were women at this event, including the governor's chief of staff, Beth Hansen, state Senator Stephanie Coonsey, and Representative Teresa Gavarone from Bowling Green. Now, you would think that in this era of Me Too and sexual harassment and the idea that it's not okay to just play the good old boys club anymore, that one of these women who were there might have tried to stop them from going on these flights of fancy, or at least maybe have said, pulled them to the side and said, you know, you may want to rethink that. And I think it's really telling because you know what they were doing about a week ago Wednesday, Chuck? Most of the members of the Ohio House.
They were going to a retraining, sensitivity training someplace.
Exactly. They were doing sexual harassment training mandated by the speaker. They had someone come. So because like last week, one of the committees, a bunch of the committees canceled in the morning, and the other one moved his time up to way early to get a bill in because they had this sexual harassment training. But yet, the vast majority of these people went over to this event where, honestly, they wasted, if the taxpayers paid for this sensitivity training, this sexual harassment response training, if we paid for this, our money was wasted. Because they didn't get it, and they thought this was funny. They thought it was funny to crack stupid sexual. I mean, they acted like a bunch of frat boys, and I'm not really trying to demean every fraternity, but the stereotypical, you know, Animal House, you know, teen angst movie frat boy image that you ever have seen, these guys were living it out.
It's locker room. It's locker room talk, except that there were girls in the locker room.
Right, and I know they were at the athletic club, so yeah, there are locker rooms, so they probably could have taken it off to the locker room and said some of this. But you have Governor Kasich's chief of staff. You have a sitting state senator. You have a sitting state representative, all female. And they sat there, even when Senator Huffman was bashing one of their direct colleagues, Representative Inelski, that we talked about earlier. Now, again, guys, and it says, surprising no one in this article, Connor Brown says, surprising no one, Speaker Rosenberger sat in the front row, mucking it up, presumably perfectly happy to leave the cleaning up of the House's culture to the next guy, because he's termed out.
He's
going to be gone at the end of the year. So really, here it goes that, you know, so this is created, this is like an embarrassment. This is egg on the face of these people who, first of all, if you remember correctly, as we've talked about before, and if you look on Third Rail's website, it's prominent across the top of the banner, 84 days with a request they've had to the House of Representatives for public records regarding who knew what when regarding the Wes Goodman issue. A third and fourth request been 70 days with no response. And then the Senate public records request has been 22 days. So basically, And of course, they had another one they had to stop and restart with the Senate. These are leaders who are not leading. These are leaders who are acting like spoiled children. And honestly, Chuck, if they keep this up, they will self-impose what they're all worried about, which is that 2018 electorally is starting to look like a mirror of 2006 when they lost statewide and the House went over to the Democrats.
Well, they're acting like an arrogant elite who think they can get away with anything. Now, look, I'm sure that this was an event that they thought was private and that nobody was going to be there, and what they were going to be saying was a secret.
Well,
Barry, what is the least secret thing you can do? You can go to a meeting and get drunk or get semi-tanked and say stupid stuff. And do you really think it's going to be kept a secret? There's going to be somebody in the room who's going to blather. That's just the bottom line, and which is exactly what happened in this case.
Right. Well, but again, you know, they get into this little cabal, this little secrecy pocket, and decide that they're going to basically savage their colleagues. There's some of their sitting colleagues. Now, it didn't say how many other sitting colleagues were savaged except for Candace Keller, who, again, is probably one of the sweetest people you're ever going to meet. She is committed to the pro-life cause. She's given her life to it. She's the executive director of the Pregnancy Care Center in Middletown, Ohio, and has been for years. And she is the most eloquent defender of pro-life that I have ever seen at the State House, even to the point that, like, the seat came open and she was running in the general election. She had won the primary against the caucus. She had won the primary and she won the general election in a Republican district. And they seated her to the seat to fill the remainder of the term because she had won the general. It wasn't more than a couple of weeks after she was seated that she was standing on the floor of the House eloquently defending life against all the onslaught of every tactic the Democrats could throw up. You know, 8, 9, 10 female Democrat members talking about how horrible it was to impose your morality on their bodies, blah, blah, blah. And who was defending the life position? A freshman who'd been there 2 weeks and who was basically counting coup on everybody on the left side of the table. And I'm not just talking the Democrats.
Yeah.
She tied them up in knots. It was fantastic to watch. And she's outspoken. She's also going to be the sponsor to ban sanctuary cities in Ohio. You know, she believes she's conservative, Chuck. I mean, that's all there is to it. And these people can't stand it because she's setting a standard that shows just how shallow their false conservatism really is.
Wow. So, well, naturally, now I'm going to say something. I'm not a fan of Bill Sites, never have been, never will be, unless he changes drastically. Bill Sites is essentially a libertarian, which, again, I have a strong agreement with in a lot of areas, not in a lot of the areas that Bill Sites holds positions in. Sometimes Sites is our friend and sometimes he's our enemy because of his libertarianism. It's not surprising that someone who has a strong grasp of worldview and faith, like Diana Fessler, was pilloried by Mr. Sites. It's also not a shock that he would attack this sitting representative, who was his colleague, when she wasn't in the room. It's really not shocking at all. This was all wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Look at these idiots that we have to put up with. That's exactly what it was all about. You'll notice, I find it very interesting that the people, the females that you mentioned in the room, didn't get up and walk out.
Yes.
Why not?
No, that's pretty obvious. They did because they are all on the power train.
Yes, exactly.
You have Coonsy, who basically jumped into the House and then climbed over to the Senate and has been, she's on a power train to become leadership in the Senate. You have Gavarone, who wants to become powerful and wants to be in leadership in the House. And of course you have the governor's chief of staff who may be looking for her next gig, because her boss is going to be termed out at the end of 2018. And well, thankfully for the rest of the country, he wasn't successful in his presidential aspirations.
In other words, we dodged a bullet.
Yeah. In other words, we dodged a bullet. So, but again, for these individuals to basically sit there silently and continue to allow this to go on, at the very least, getting up and leaving would have shown a quality of character that was sorely lacking in the rest of the room.
Well,
but again, if you're trying to become one of the crowd, if you're trying to become, you know, part of the cool kids, as Brown references in his article,
yes,
you take the ribbing and you keep on climbing.
Well, you have to remember that getting up and leaving sends a message, and so does sitting and listening.
Yes, it does. There is no non-messaging there. I mean, you're making a choice, you're making a decision, whichever way you go. So again, you know, the McCarthy whole, the whisper campaign is in full force in the Ohio Republican caucus because these are people who are talking about their colleagues and belittling them and creating a situation where they're basically blacklisting a number of their colleagues. I'm sure that, you know, other unpopular reps like Nina Vitale and Ron Hood and John Becker, who's now embarrassed them by introducing not one but six constitutional amendment resolutions to turn Ohio into a right-to-work state, to join every state surrounding us in the ring. Every state around us has gone to right to work for, not forcing someone to pay union dues, and are experiencing economic, you know, increases and improvements and explosions. But Ohio, we can't do it here for some reason because we have too many Republicans who are pro union.
Barry,
and that was by design as well, as these guys handpick people before primaries that they want to support with the caucus money.
Barry, I lived in Michigan for 11 years. If you'd have told me that Michigan would have gone right to work before Ohio did, I would have laughed right in your face and called you a numbskull.
Exactly.
And yes,
you would have thought we would have been smoking something before it was legal.
Yes. And guess where we are? Michigan has had to adopt right-to-work legislation because the burden was so onerous that businesses were packing up and leaving. We're going. Right. Now, has it been good for the workers? Yes. You know why? There are jobs.
Yes.
And what is there? I'm going to talk about my own particular county here. Mm-hmm. Licking County. Licking County is a union bastion. How is it for jobs? It's terrible here. We are a former industrial powerhouse. All you have to do is go down to, there's a little place, there's a little museum in downtown Newark called The Works, which I would recommend, by the way. And it gives the history of Central Ohio and Licking County's industrial might. What industrial might is there now in Licking County? There isn't any. We have about two main industries in Newark that are actively really employing people. Now, we've got a lot of little cottage-style businesses and that kind of thing. And personally, I think that that's the future of the country anyway, is cottage, little cottage industries that are mom-and-pop shops that are people are making things and running lathes in their garages and that kind of stuff on small contract. You may laugh at me, but I think that's a growing trend. But nonetheless, why do we have that problem in Licking County? Well, there is an attitude of why should I come to Newark when what's going to happen, the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to unionize the shop and I won't be able to compete. I won't be able to fire people. I won't be able to get the best workers. And then that creates a cycle where there's despair, where there's, part of this, there's all kinds of little facets to this problem. Part of it is the Christian worldview that people had, for instance, still operated under, even the vestiges of it in the 40s and 50s, is gone.
Right.
Newark has a terrible opioid problem. It has to be one of the worst in the state. We have terrible problems with crime and that kind of thing. Why? Well, there's no jobs. What do people do? They work hard enough, they'll go work a minimum wage job to get enough money to go buy more drugs. Or skip the middleman and become an entrepreneur and sell drugs. This is why people were rubbing their hands together here about legalization of marijuana. And I'm like, okay, this is very interesting. Here's the problem. There's only so much distribution to be done. You know what True. I'm saying? On marijuana. Okay. You might be one of the ones who gets in on the ground floor, if you will, on the new industry. And they're all fighting to do that. But the fact is that once the legalization is in place, all the little guys are going to be shoved back out. So you're just basically going to become dependent users. You're not going to become the guys who were in on the ground floor of the industry. People have lost that sort of entrepreneurial ability to think through what's going to happen in a business. Now, one of the reasons we have that, we don't have right to work here. There are shops that are closed. They're not supposed to be, but they are. If you want to work in such and such a place, you have to join the union, pay the dues, and it doesn't matter if you agree or disagree with union leadership. You got to pay the dues. Now, there are ways to get your dues back, the portions of it that supposedly go out for political activity. I always laugh at that. If you recall, the Clinton administration came right out and said they weren't going to enforce that 20 years ago. And Republicans didn't make a strong case that they were going to come out and enforce it when they got back into power. So, you know, that particular federal law became a will of the wisp. There are people who do manage to get the job done, but boy, do they have to jump through hoops to do it. So, again, Indiana right to work. Again, another state I never thought would go right to work. Wisconsin is a right to work state.
Yeah, yes, yes, they are, and every one of them is experiencing an economic boom. West Virginia is a right-to-work state.
Yes, a coal mining state.
And it was upheld by their courts.
Yes, a coal mining state.
That's the extent of what the economic renaissance is happening, except in Ohio. But what we're going to do, Chuck, is driven by our governor, and even though he hasn't come out publicly on this particular bill yet, everybody knows he's there, is they're going to push to force special rights for lesbians, gays, transgender, bisexual, blah, 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 the whole alphabet soup in hiring and accommodations and everything else without, and it's going to, in the first place it's going to be attacked is going to be the church and small businesses. This House Bill 160 that we talked a little bit about last week is a guaranteed killer of jobs. But what's going to happen? Well, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce has come out in support of it because they see these economic benefits. And I look at them and say, okay, wait a minute. You just put out a list of all these big companies and boutique companies, everybody else, who already have the high, you know, special rights policies in place for their own employees. What would this change for you? It changes nothing. What would it change for those who don't or don't want to have these policies in place? It forces them to acquiesce to the cultural zeitgeist or be penalized by the force of government. That's what it's about. Okay. It's not about – which exactly. will not improve the economy in Ohio. Now, my guess is this is tied in some weird Machiavellian way to Columbus's bid to get Amazon's headquarters in Ohio.
Oh, absolutely it is.
That they think they're going to impress Bezos by passing a bill that forces everybody to basically accept, accede to, and embrace the radical gay rights agenda, or be, you know, lose contracts and lose jobs and be pulled in front of the Civil Rights Commission and be sued because somebody claims, just like with this, a lot of the sexual harassment stuff, that somebody claims you did something because that's how they perceived it, not because that's what you did. But that's how we're going to go about it. And we're going to talk more about this next week, because the chamber is supposed to come in next week and give their reasons why they're supporting this piece of legislation, which we know, we full well know that this is a situation where what they're trying to do is use this as the way to get everybody worked up and then come in with a quote-unquote compromise, which is this Ohio Accord bill that they were working on last session that we stopped, trying to say it's much more, you know, friendly to faith, et cetera. But we know that anywhere these bills have gone and they've made statewide, quote-unquote, non-discrimination policies for sexual preference, it has been used as a club against Christianity, Christian businesses, and churches. That's what it's being used for. That's the reason why you've got the Masterpiece Cakes case going before the United States Supreme Court. That's the reason why Baronel Stutzman in Washington State's about to lose her business, home, and her life savings, because people that she served regularly, she just didn't want to go and, you know, provide a special service for their homosexual, you know, quote-unquote wedding. The reason why Elaine Photography in New Mexico is out of business, because these statewide policies get put in place and then these Christian businesses get attacked.
Exactly. That's how the bottom line is not you brought up an excellent point, and that is that these companies who have already adopted special rights programs aren't content to have those special rights programs already in place voluntarily. They don't want voluntary compliance. They want coercion.
You're right. They want it. But it's also interesting, Chuck, because if you think about it, if you're in a capitalist business environment, what's the one thing you don't want to have happen? You don't want more competition.
Yes.
You would like to keep your competition. But what they're arguing is that this will bring more businesses to Ohio if we're a more welcoming state, and therefore it'll benefit everybody. Now, okay, these are big businesses. They know they really don't have too many big competitors, although I think a number of them, if you think about it, and you could go down this list, there are some big, big companies that are endorsing this ridiculous move. But Amazon is going to come in to Ohio, and they're going to attack the other companies that they're already hurting, the Targets, the Sears, the JCPenney's, you look at the Toys R Us's of the world that are all going into bankruptcy.
Yep.
You don't see them on this list because that's the whole switch. The progressives are trying to run traditional businesses out as well.
Well,
this is all being tacitly endorsed by Governor John Kasich because he has already said, if you're going to bake a cake, just bake the cake. You know, he doesn't want to protect the individual right of conscience in this state. Now, it's funny because we just had President Trump last week announce the formation of a new division within the Office of Civil Rights of Health and Human Services for the Office of Conscience and Religious Liberty in Health and Human Services. And that is to protect as civil rights a physician or a medical professional's ability to decline to, you know, as a pharmacist to supply abortifacients, to engage in abortion, euthanasia, transgender reassignment surgeries. The federal government is going to protect conscience rights, where in the state government, we're going to destroy conscience rights because John Kasich wants that.
Well, and Barry, you know, it's fun to watch as these the federal laws change for the better. The states that really want to take a more progressive attack, California, Oregon, Washington, Illinois, New York, Connecticut. What are they talking about? They're all talking about asserting their state sovereignty in these issues. Now, wasn't it a funny thing when the states were opposing the federal government overstepping its bounds and started talking about doing state sovereignty things? Oh my gosh, it's all states' rights. You're going back to the, you know, before the Civil War. We've already settled all these questions. The federal government has hegemony. You can't do anything the federal government won't let you do. Look, we've even got secession movements in California.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Personally, if California and Oregon and Washington want to secede and form the United States of Western America, please don't let the door hit you on the way out. Now, what's interesting about that is, now I realize this isn't part of the discussion, but it is, in that what happens when you force people into a situation that they don't want to be in, they try to get away from it. Well, what's happening in California? There is a group in California that is trying to secede away from the coastal counties in California and form a state called New California. And if you look at a map of New California, it's a moon shape. It's essentially with the horns pointing toward the west. In other words, it just north of San Francisco, down through just inside the Central Valley and all the way down just above San Diego. They want to get away from Los Angeles, Orange County, San Francisco, that whole tier, the far left of California, because they say this is destroying the state. Why is it destroying the state? They're shoving progressive policies down the throats of people and businesses and forcing them out of the state. California is about to go negative on both population and business growth. I think they already are negative on population and business growth. The only thing keeping them positive, if they are positive on population growth, is illegal immigration. This is what happens.
That's true.
This is what happens. Do people have the sovereign right to decide who they're connected with politically? Well, I would suggest you read the Declaration of Independence, which makes the open statement when the time, I'm going to paraphrase, when the time comes to dissolve the political bonds that have united a people, it's time.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
This leads to a discussion of this because of this. Now, what's going to happen? Barry, this thing is really an attempt, a backdoor move to restrict churches from teaching, not just Christian churches, but other faiths that hold to the same tenets, to stop teaching that homosexuality and transgenderism and all forms of perverse sexuality are sins.
our sin. Well, and it's interesting, Chuck, because a provision in this bill, House Bill 160 that's there, basically requires the Ohio Civil Rights Commission to write a curricula that the schools, primary and secondary schools in the state, and it didn't say public, it just said primary and secondary, which means it's the private and the Christian schools as well, would have to adopt and teach on the origins of prejudice against sexual minorities, and the pervasive discrimination and where it's coming from. Well, we all know what that's code for. That's the Bible.
Yes, that exactly.
Is, you know, and whether, you know, you may be Muslim as well, and it may, you know, for the Quran. But the point is that this is an attack directly against the teachings of God on human sexuality and human family. That's what we're getting down to here. And so all the schools will have to put this in place. And, of course, there's also provision that if you have a preschool, because they don't want to leave preschools out, that you can be fined or brought before the Civil Rights Commission or whatever if you do not open up your hiring for transgenders, openly homosexual or lesbians, to be staff or teaching assistants in preschools. Now, okay, Chuck, you and I both know there are a lot of preschools that are run by Christian organizations or Christian churches.
A lot.
And there's a provision in this bill that basically says that the provisions of this section of the code are not, cannot be abrogated or waived by other laws. So that means that because we have in our employment law, they're saying that, you know, you have the right, you have a religious exemption right. Now, in the statute, it says that nothing can trump these, but there's a little provision at the very end of the bill, and we were kind of looking at it and laughing in respect, but it's in a section, subsection, that's basically the legislative intent language, which means it actually isn't in statute. It's just kind of a feel-good guidance as to why we're doing this. And the provision says that, you know, it would not affect any current, you know, statutes regarding religious exemptions. But that's
nonsense.
Not what the statute changes say.
Exactly.
It says exactly the opposite. This statement has no legal weight. Sometimes the courts look at legislative intent statements, but most of the time they do not. And even so, a statement does not trump a statute. And that statute forces compliance, whereas the statement panders that, you wouldn't have to comply because you've already got an exemption. It's a Trojan horse bill.
Oh yes,
it's being pushed. You know, the chamber is out there because they're seeing this as the way to get the big box boys like Amazon to, you know, invest heavier in Ohio. And again, this is the Chamber of Commerce being tone deaf. It isn't the big boys who are bringing the economy of Ohio around. It's establishing the
small entrepreneurial business.
Mom and pop, small, under 50 employee businesses, and helping to reduce regulations and taxes like the federal government just did with the Trump tax reform that will help bring about the economic renaissance. It's removing those penalties and those barriers in taxing and regulation. It's opening up the state with right to work.
Okay.
It's
yes.
Being inviting in those ways, not in kowtowing to a tyrannical sexual minority who wants their perversions to be paraded and preferred.
And normalized.
I don't even think they care about normalization. I think they just care about eradication of anything.
I can tell you from experience in dealing with people, what they want to be, they don't want to be tolerated. They want to be complete acceptance without question. Okay,
oh,
Barry, now that bill has a number. Who should we tell people? It's House Bill 160, correct?
Correct.
And there's a Senate version, which we don't think is going anyplace. It's SB 100, I think.
SB 100, which is actually worse than the House version.
It's worse.
With some of the things that got in there.
Okay.
But, you know, if the House version moves and it goes to the Senate, there could be a move to switch the bills and make the Senate version the vehicle and just call it an amended or a substitute bill and have the worst of it so that the House just votes up or down on the Chamber of Commerce endorsed piece of legislation.
Okay, so we want you to contact your state representative and oppose House Bill 160. And you can give whatever your reasons are, but just tell them you're opposed to it. You know, you're opposed to its amendment. You just want it to go down. There's no way to amend this thing into being any good. All right.
Absolutely. And this is your state legislature. This is the state House, the state Senate. This is not a congressional piece. It is the state.
So. Yeah. Okay. That being said, we are out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. Join us for the Relationships Under Construction Banquet, March 8th at the Villa Milano. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.